Good morning. My name's Gavin from FE News. Welcome to episode 8 of the Future Assessment. It's the final episode of this season. I feel a little bit sort of sad, really. Today is a really cool one. So that's going to, basically, it's a really, really interesting one. We've got Dean and we've got Peter. Total global episode today, actually. We're looking at the future of assessment. What innovations can we expect to see? My co-host is Dean Blewett. Dean, do you want to come into the studio? Hey, Dean, how are you?
Hi, Gavin, you okay? Loving the introduction music as well.
It's pretty good. Did you see like the progression from innovation from being around like assessment, from being like empty desk, we all remember that, to like sort of scribbling down with a pencil to sort of VR. I love that video.
Gets you ready in the mood.
It's a little bit of circle of life, this one, because we had Janine right at the very beginning on episode one. When we were talking about the innovation funds, and this is episode 8, and we're talking about the future of assessment and what innovations we're seeing and where we're sort of going with the innovation fund. But what I'm particularly interested in, has there been any sort of themes coming up? Because I know you guys were expecting a handful of people to be sort of approaching you about sort of innovations in assessment, but you've been inundated, which is great. And it's just like, and it's just sort of interesting, what does that mean? Because the pandemic has sped everything up, has really sort of highlighted lots of different things, really. And I think it's just interesting as to what themes you could have maybe seen, or where are you at with the fund at the minute, really?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, it's honestly, it's been an unbelievable response to the call to arms. I think we had in window one, we had 19 applications, which blew us away, really. And the passion and that really came through in those applications and the areas of focus as well. You could tell there was some true experts in there, and the way that they perceived the assessment system, as well as the areas that they were focused on, obviously, you know, had a lot of value in there. I think if I had to group it into a theme, the only theme I could really safely say there was assessment. they were literally across the entire learner journey. So to give some sort of flavour of that, we had some ideas that were focused on the pre-programme space. So this is a space where, you know, we're looking at learners before they've even chose a qualification, and we're trying to ensure that we're recognising those prior skills. We had assessment focused on that on-programme phase, where we're talking about, you know, formative assessments, so how are we really providing, you know, a rich experience and transformational experience for learners there. And we had some, obviously, in that summative assessment space as well. I think you mentioned the pandemic there in your question, and I think that you know, it is a key thing as well. A lot of the applications involved some form of technology there as well, and I don't know if that's, you know, a sort of response to how we've had to use and embrace technology in the pandemic, that, you know, we've seen a massive shift in education towards that. I think it's probably one of the sectors that's, you know, truly worked through the pandemic using technology. And I think, you know, we've seen that apart a lot of the bids that people have seen, you know, things that have really worked well and things that maybe haven't worked well. And people have really used that to inform their applications. If there are any applicants watching, though, you know, absolutely thank you. It was really, really inspiring to see the application come in, and if I could have, I would have funded them all. I certainly wasn't envious of the decisions that expert panel had to make at the end. But yeah, unbelievable response, Kevin.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And what I'm interested about today is a bit like future gazing, really, because the fund can sort of highlight different ideas, but it's just like, what could the future be of assessment? A bit like that opening video, do you know what I mean? What have we sort of gone through on this journey? And it feels like, I don't know, we're at this new stage of the pandemic once again, of like, what does that all mean? And it's, you know, what's the silver lining in this? You know, it seems that pandemic, if you look at the positives out of it, which, you know, there are, there's also the horrific bits of it, which I don't really want to focus on today. But it's just like, you know, shining lights in different corners where before we didn't really look, you know. So it's, you know, looking at assessment in a different way, but also looking at inclusion, accessibility, new ways of sort of motivating, inspiring people, looking at the future of work, which is sped up, you know, hybrid working. You know, are we going to be going back to into lockdown again after this, you know, this new variant coming into play? Do you know what I mean? It's just like, what does that mean for the future? We got really interesting guests. It's totally international. Peter, I wonder if you could come and join us in the studio. So, hi, Pete, how are you?
I'm good. Hi. I'm in Australia.
I was going to do it. Like, it's been Newcastle in Australia. But it's what is interesting is that I did before the show, I did a good day, but I meant to do a good evening. I just got it all completely wrong. So this is a good evening, but as you said, it's always a good day in Australia. So
it is, except it's raining. But
what? This is breaking all of those two. I'm like, serious.
Tell you, I have never been so cold as I've been since I got to Australia. It's not what you expect. It's really strange.
You haven't been to Newcastle upon Tyne, Peter. You need to come up here.
I think it's about your perceptions. You expect Australia to be hot. So like 19 degrees feels cold to me, right? Because it should be 30. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, not at all. You throw me there with the rain and the 19 degrees. I was expecting it to be like 33 or something like that. What's interesting is, Peter, you were one of the applicants for the Innovation Fund. So this is showing like the global reach of and where everyone is as an ecosystem working together as a global community to be thinking around the future of assessment. So, what made you sort of get involved with the fund? That's interesting. But also what do you see how assessment could work in the future, Peter?
Well, so, I mean, I've been hitting my head on a brick wall in education for like 30 years, right? Because I'm kind of old. And it all goes back to my own memories of schooling, right? And most of those memories are tied in with bad experiences of assessment. So let me give you one example. When I was 15 and a bit and heading towards the O-levels, which gives you an idea of how long ago it was, my parents were summoned in to see the headmaster, who told them I was going to fail all my O-levels because my English was so bad, right? I then got a B for English language. Right. And the school queried the result because they said it wasn't possible. And that's just kind of symptomatic. And I could roll off half a dozen other kind of experiences that were really negative for me and it's kind of sticking in my head. And my daughter, who's a primary school teacher, kind of says, oh, Diddins, did the poor privileged little white boy not like his private schooling then? And of course, that's exactly the point, right? If it didn't work for me, just think how worse it is for all those people who are not privileged little white boys and didn't have and don't have all the advantages that I've got. So I'm kind of passionate about how do we change the education system. And I recognize that assessment drives practice in schools. So we have to change assessment. And so obviously the Assessment Innovation Fund was of interest. And of course, as an academic, getting money to do research is just like win-win. It's like, pay me to do what I want to do anyway. That would be good. So please fund me, Dean.
So what was your vision for, because I know we talked about it before the show, but what was your vision and concept for the future of assessment? Because I think the audience will find this really interesting.
Well, so there's my vision for the future of assessment and there's what I applied for. from the Education Innovation Fund, which is a much more kind of down to earth and kind of, so I'm going to start with the broader vision thing, which is really about, you know, assessment should enhance learning for everybody, right? And at the moment we have this system where 30% of the kids have to fail in order for the rest to be seen to succeed. So, you know, if you've got your GCSEs, you know, some kids have to get an F, and we kind of go, we say it's, norm reference, but criteria reference, but actually, it's norm reference, and we smooth it all out. So that seems to me unethical. And what we ought to be doing is looking at what can you do today that you couldn't do tomorrow, not what can you do that they can't do. That would make it that everybody can succeed. And as much as possible, it should be integrated into the learning process. And it should focus on the things that matter, not just the things it's easy to assess. And we have all this kind of spiel about the importance of 21st century skills or meta skills or whatever you want to call them. They're not 21st century and they're not skills, a lot of them, but let's not go there. But we don't assess those things because it's hard, right? And because we don't assess them, they aren't the top priority. And you could see that, you know, back in 2010, when the league tables changed in England, right? Literally the next day, secondary schools changed what they were going to offer the following year as options. Right, because they only wanted to offer the things that are going to help them do well in the league tables. Well, that's not education, right? So my passion is about how do we make assessment actually fit for purpose so it does what it should do, which is help people succeed and understand where they're going. And ideally, we'd be getting rid of, you know, those standardized examination, high stakes, stressy things. I was talking to a head yesterday And he gave me a great example, which some people will find a little bit radical. But he said, you know, I'm talking to some 7-year-old kids in my school, and we want them to think about persuasive writing. So we did a bit of input on persuasive writing, but then we said to them, use it. So do something with the persuasive writing. What can we do? The kids said, well, you can do anything you like. But, you know, you might want to write to somebody who you think is who you admire and you'd like to talk to more or something like that. So anyway, some of these kids, 4 girls, as it happened, came back to him and said, we want to write to our local councillor who happens to be have been a female Olympian, right, athlete. So he said, OK, fine, you do that. What are you going to ask her to do? He said, oh, we want her to come into school and talk to us. Right. So that's great. OK, go ahead. You can do that. They'd written the letter and they came to me and said, will you correct our letter for us? Do you want to look at it? Do you want to check it's good enough for us to send out? I said, no. You know, you're not going to send it until you're happy that it's good enough and as good as you can do, because you want this person to actually respond. And we'll know whether you've been successful by the response you get. You know, does she actually come into school? So they sent the letter, and a bit later, the counsellor came into school, right? Now, imagine what had happened if the head had said, yes, I'm going to mark your letter, right? What happened to those girls is they had their confidence boosted. They felt they were having a real impact in the world. They were getting to communicate with someone who they admired and wanted to talk to more. And they were being empowered. Had the headmaster just marked their letter, they wouldn't have got any of that. So it's that idea of how do we build kind of fit for purpose assessment that matches the needs of the learners, that has intrinsic assessment built into the activity, that it's not an add-on, it's actually part of the process. You know you've succeeded because you have some impact or because someone gives you some feedback. You know? So that's the kind of thing I'm interested in. And then you know, I come down to earth and I kind of think about, you know, I'm working with my students. And we're worried about how we work with our students and the sort of feedback we give them on assignments and whether they read that feedback and all that kind of stuff and how they know how they're doing in relative to the teaching standards that they have to meet. So I work in teacher education. And I started playing with the idea of micro-credentials and digital badges as a kind of a better way of getting feedback to students. So rather than marking the assignment and giving them a score out of 100, we want to mark the assignment and give them some digital badges. And we think logically that should mean that they get some feedback that they otherwise might not got. Because we know from the literature, if you just give them a mark, it's kind of like, oh, great, done that, job done, put it away. They don't bother to read the feedback. They don't get the formative feedback from the assignment. Whereas if you're giving them digital badges or a set of digital badges, the feedback is there in their face. To know how they've done on the assignment, they have to look at the feedback, right? And we're hoping that it will also help them see how they're progressing towards the ultimate goal, which is like, you know, we've got this set of standards you have to meet, and you've met that one, but you've got all of these other ones you haven't met. So hopefully it's going to give them greater agency and kind of understanding of, well, so what do I need to do in order to fill the gaps? And if we are clever about how we design our courses and we make sure our courses actually do align with the standards, which would be a good thing for them to do, and we let students know how they align to the standards, then that allows students to make choices about, you know, what do I want to do? Which course do I need to do to fill that gap? I've got these badges, I've met those standards, but I haven't met these ones. I need to do that course and that course. Whereas at the moment, they don't really know. And at the moment, actually, I think I probably shouldn't say this on the air. I suspect that our assignments don't address the standards quite as explicitly as they probably ought to do. So you know, there's a kind of improving the quality of our provision at the same time as enhancing the student agency and giving the students better information. And also, if you're an employer, right, your student comes out and you know one who got 80% is better than one that got 60%, but you don't know what they're better at, right? They might have done really badly at the bit you really care about, but you've got no idea because the 80% doesn't tell you what they can do. Whereas if you've got the set of digital badges, you can see what they're really good at. You can see what they're not so good at. So we think that this is a powerful idea, but you know, there's a lack of evidence. The literature really doesn't tell us. There's not sufficient empirical evidence. So yeah, the logic is right. Does the evidence support that? We don't know. So that's kind of what we want to play with. And then
that's the whole point of sort of being innovative and having a play, isn't it? You've got to, you know, learn and learn fast, fail quickly, do keep going, isn't it? So if we were to spin this out of being around teacher assessment and to look at this around being across different sort of occupational areas, is there a way that we could be thinking of digital badge and micro-credentialing being a way to be able to help people with lifelong learning, with CPD, with continual professional development throughout all of their career, rather than just on a course? Is that like a potential golden ticket to be able to help people continuously learn? So like you said, Peter, you know, if someone's got 80%, you don't know what that 80% is in, but is there a way where you could then, you know, be able to highlight those areas where they are really strong and that could then help them into specialist areas?
I mean, at the moment, I'm no expert on digital badges, you know, hands up on learning. But my perception is that digital badges tend to be used on those kind of short CPD type courses. They tend to be used on kind of specific skills. And very often they say, you've done the course. And they actually don't give them information about what you've actually achieved. So they're a kind of, they're a badge for engagement rather than a badge for what your capabilities are. But clearly the other thing that they potentially allow us to do is kind of broaden the range of sorts of competences that we focus on so that we move away from that kind of academic knowledge that you can write in your exam paper to more competency-based stuff, focusing on what you can actually do. And that's one of the big problems with assessment, and it kind of harks back to that 21st century skill things. You know, the traditional forms of assessment don't really lend themselves to assessing how good you are at collaboration. Yep. Or, you know, how good you are at leveraging value from your network, or, you know, all those kinds of things. Schmoozing. I mean, you know, schmoozing is a really important skill, right? Yeah, we talk about the old boy network, right? You know, you want to go to Eton, not because you're going to get a great education, though, of course, you will, but because you're going to get a great network, right? And it's partly about networking. We know that something like 40% of jobs come through personal recommendations or personal contacts, right? So actually teaching kids to schmooze is really important. How do you assess their schmoozing ability? Well, you ain't going to do that in a written exam, right? It's just not going to, it's not feasible. So we need other ways of assessing their competence in those things. And of course, with schmoozing, you could do it by looking at how good their network is in LinkedIn or something like that. But, you know, I'm rabbiting.
Steve, what do you think around, you know, we're looking like, innovations in assessment, this is quite interesting around sort of breaking down sort of to, this enables the learner, but also the employer, also to understand different specialist areas through micro-credentialing and badging of where people have got strengths and weaknesses. That's interesting around sort of breaking that down.
Strengths. I mean, one of the nice things about badges is they focus on strengths. So one of the problems with an exam, right, is you get, if you get 70%, that means you don't know 30% of it, right? So it's already, it's kind of highlighting a gap. Whereas if you get a badge, you've got a badge, you've succeeded, right? There's no gap there, you got the badge, right? So it's part of that positive focus. It's part of that saying, assessment is not about saying what you can't do. It's about saying what you can do and how you can build on and extend that. So I think that's a really important shift in emphasis that we kind of need to get into the assessment system. Because at the moment, it tends to be very kind of like, you know, you've got to jump over this hurdle and you're kind of that far from it. You know, no one gets 100%, right? So you're always inadequate, right? But if you've got the badge, you've succeeded.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think that's one of the, I was going to say, I think that was something we loved about Peter's bid, is the idea that, you know, assessment, I think it always feels like almost like the end point, doesn't it, of the process, and that's a final hurdle almost, and that's all it for, whereas actually, you know, assessment's part of that learning process, and the whole idea of assessment is it's for learners, and I think, you know, that comes across very, very strongly when we're talking to Peter there, that, you know,
it's a focus on what skills you have. The whole point of assessment actually in the education system at the moment is not for learners.
Right? No, but I'm saying it should be, though. It should be. I mean, for us, you know, when we're doing this, yeah, it's not at the moment, though, is it? Because it's for, assessment's such a gigantic beast, and you know, you're right, that blue sky thinking is a way to think about things, but such a big area. I think for us, you know, assessment innovation really needs to be about that continuous evaluation and that continuous advancement of assessment, but with the learner at the heart of the decision making. Ultimately, assessment should really be first and foremost about what the learner's getting from assessment. You know, how are they identifying what they're good at and where they need to improve? And I think if you've got that as your focus, you do tend a lot of the other stuff that we might need or require from assessment sort of falls out of that. And I think almost at the moment, you alluded to it before, that at the moment with the current assessment systems, it doesn't feel as if it's designed for the learner. It doesn't feel as if assessment's at times part of that learning process. And I think, you know, when you talked about the pandemic earlier, Gavin, and I know in this country, you know, we've got a strong sort of focus on the future and, you know, building back better, constantly reinventing ourselves in careers and life, because, you know, there's no longer a career for life, and certainly in our own lives, we have to be more adaptable. And I think with the current assessment system, it almost, you know, focuses you on, you know, it doesn't encourage taking risks. It doesn't encourage curiosity. It doesn't encourage a system where, you know, mistakes are okay as long as you learn from those mistakes. And I think moving to, you know, the digital badge, and in particular that Peter's referenced there, it is that focus on actually these are the skills you can do. And these are areas where, you know, you may need to develop a bit more, but it's not just a grade of 60%. Let's leave it there because I've done all I can on it. It's really that continuous sort of process in there. So I think it's a very, very powerful idea from Peter.
I think it also enables that stackable, doesn't it, if you know what I mean? So I think, and also the other part of it is communication, because like what you're saying, Peter, and what you're saying as well, Dean, is that if you're going this off of percentiles and stuff like that, that doesn't give the full picture. But if you could break it down to make it so as it's much more transparent as to what someone's strengths are, but also for their own selves, how, you know, if we just focus on strengths all the time, we've got to topple a bit. Do you know what I mean? You need to, it's a bit like that bodybuilder who's got like really big bodies, but they've got like sort of stick legs. Do you know what I mean? It ain't going to work out in the end. They're just going to go dang. So like, how do you sort of do both? Do you know what I mean? How do you then sort of encourage both by then bringing everyone up to not just beyond sort of looking at standards, but looking for work? Do you know what I mean? Looking for, you know, future careers where it might even highlight for them, this is an area you're really, really good at. Do you really enjoy it? Why don't you go down this path much more? And I think it's got potential to help with careers advice and guidance. It's got potential to help with communication for to learners, from educators to learners, from learners to educators to employers. I just think it's really interesting. It's got massive potential for a huge amount of different things, really.
Absolutely. I think you touched on there as well, like the meaningful feedback. I think, you know, when Peter described his approach to us, you could, you know, I think that's key to it as well, isn't it? That you can see exactly where your strengths and weaknesses are, and you can build upon it. And it's meaningful for the learner first and foremost.
Yeah, well, we definitely. I had about 7 million different questions, but we've only got about 7 minutes left. Well, I don't know how that's happening, but like, what challenges or what changes would you want to see personally to the future of assessment? And I'll open it up first of all to you, Peter, around what would you want to see around, if you could dream and dream big, what would you want to see for the future of assessment?
7 minutes is enough. So, you know, go to Heartbreak.education, my blog site, where you can read my post about the criteria for effective summative assessment. And actually, my dreaming bid is very small, right? Because there are some really easy things like, you know, don't use assessment for dual purposes, right? If assessment is supposed to be about what learners know, don't use it to assess the quality of teachers, right? Yeah. Because that gets teachers to game the system. That's why they teach to the test, right? Don't do it. There are other ways to assess the quality of teachers. If the assessment is about what the kids know, use it for that. That would make a huge difference. Just that one thing would make a huge difference. The next thing is, you know, assess the things that matter, not just the things it's easy to assess, right? It doesn't matter how valid and reliable your measure is. If you're assessing a pile of dung, it is still a pile of dung, right? And if you're not interested in piles of dung, then it doesn't matter that it was valid and reliable, right? So, you know, it needs to be relevant and credible. People need to believe it and think it's important. That would be really good. I've already talked about positive. It needs to be positive and formative. It needs to help you know what to do as to move forward. And it needs to highlight for you the success you've had. It should be unbiased. It shouldn't favor particular groups over other groups, right? The fact that you've never been to the seaside, you know, it makes it harder for you to write about going to the seaside than someone who has been to the seaside. That's a biased assessment that assumes you've got some cultural capital that you may not have, right? So it's not assessing your ability to write, it's assessing something else. You can see I could go on forever. It's got to be ethical, that whole thing about, you know, some shouldn't fail in order for others to succeed, but also it needs to be transparent. And you can get quite excited about AI and machine learning and all that sort of stuff, but the real problem with that are the kind of issues around transparency and the degree to which kind of unintentional biases, or perhaps intentional biases, get built into the machine. And you don't necessarily know how a judgment has been made, particularly with machine learning, you know, because you don't know how the machine has got to that decision, because it's learned for itself how to do it. And so there's some real issues around transparency. If you did all of those things, you know, that would make a massive difference. But ultimately, for me, it's about, you know, make it relevant to the kids, make it appropriate to the kids, make it help them progress. You need to have it, right? I mean, no one is saying we don't need to know what you're capable of doing. But, you know, let's balance that against the learning outcomes, the benefits that come from getting the feedback from the assessment thing. I kept that nice and short. Look, that was good.
Dave, what would you want to see? If you could dream big, what would you want to see for the future of assessment?
I think I'd echo Peter's thoughts, really. I think for me as well, you know, and as a former practitioner, I think there's a saying out there, isn't there, that education's one big wheel, and if you're in it long enough, that goes back to the start almost. I think what I'd like to see almost is that approach to coming off the wheel and really putting the learners first and foremost in our thoughts when we are making decisions, and always going back to that at the root of whatever decisions we're making. Because, you know, we work in assessment a lot at NCFE and in the Innovation Fund, in projects, in pilots. And I think, you know, the devil's absolutely in the detail, but I think always grounding yourself with that ideas of, well, what's the impact for learners? What is the benefit going to be for learners? And how is this going to enrich or transform that learning and assessment experience? I think, you know, it's important that you always go back to that original vision. But absolutely, assessment needs to be transformational. It needs to be fairer and inclusive. And it needs to provide that real rich feedback and that real rich experience for learners.
Peter, I can see you want to jump in again. I can.
No, I was just laughing because I've been playing with how do I post the link to my blog with the thing about summative assessment in it in the chat. And I can't work out how to do it. So I've sent it to you, Gavin.
No
self-promotion.
But I think what's interesting here is that this is all around communication, basically. So it's communicating to the learner around what their strengths are. It's helping the educator better, you know, sort of better do that in a different way rather than it being like a negative way around sort of, you know, you've lacked, you know, what is the gain? I think at the same time, where you've got a balance with strengths, you can also highlight to people where they need to sort of be, you know, rethinking and sort of addressing things. But also with communication, it is about the learner, but it's also around the value of a currency of a qualification is how it is understood by employers, by family, by everyone in the sort of society that you're in, really. Otherwise, you know, if it's just a badge and it's not valued, what's the point? Do you know what I mean? I think that the value of qualification and currency is really key. And the only way to do that really is through communication. You know, you've got to be able to communicate why qualifications are certain areas, why that learner is really good at X and why they should be really good at this job. I just think that's really interesting what you're looking at with micro-credentialing, really, and badging.
Fundamentally, there is a real problem for us in education about trust or lack of. And that's partly because of the way the assessment system encourages teachers to game the system because it's been used for dual purposes. But we ought to trust professionals more. And we ought to find ways to use teacher judgments. And one of the nice things about COVID, if there were nice things about COVID, was that actually it demonstrated to us that you can do assessment without sitting a national examination. You can use teacher judgments, and maybe teacher judgments are better and more accurate than some of the other forms of assessment. You need to have moderation. You need to make sure there's consistency and that sort of stuff. But actually, you can do things differently. And I think that's a really positive thing for us to be taking away from this, is actually there are possibilities, and kind of COVID allow us to see that the world didn't end because we didn't sit the A levels or the GCSEs or the HSC in Australia, right? We carried on and kids still progressed and still got jobs and still went to university or didn't, as the case may be.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's a really good way to end the show. I'd want to say thank you, Peter, for joining us today. Dean, real pleasure to host this with you. It's a total collaboration between NCFE and FE News. So Lindsay has just been absolutely amazing all the way through this season. I just want to say a massive thank you to Lindsay. Team FE News, Leah, you've cracked it on this one. Thank you so much. Finley did amazing with all of the stuff on pre and post production, and Kelly as well. Thank you, everyone, and see you for all of our season twos in January. So we'll hopefully see you really soon. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it's inspired you. It's inspired me. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today. And thank you to all our guests and my co-host. See you really soon.
Good night.
Thanks, Gavin. Thank you. Thanks, Peter.